Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Paul. It's nice to be here with you today, and I'd like to welcome all our listeners to the next chapter with Charlie. Today, we're going to talk about a subject that most likely will be of interest to all of our listeners. It's all about how you handle challenging and difficult situations in your personal life. We're about to delve deeply into an idea called survival archetypes. Now, Paul, think about it. What part of you comes out when your back is against the wall? Is it ugly, or is it protective in a positive way? Do you lash out in anger, cry, whine, blame, or respond with some sort of passive-aggressive attack? Or do you take the time to consider the best way to handle any given particular situation, which is the rarest option of all? These are tough questions, man, and they're hard to answer and even harder to manage, because we all have these things we're going to talk about that are protective archetypes or innate patterns that actually govern our responses. And today we're honored to have with us once again Dina Crowder, who is a specialist when it comes to archetypes. In fact, she uses them masterfully in her own coaching process. I know that for a fact because she has become my coach and mentor. In fact, Dina has done more with my anxiety in 6 weeks of coaching than my previous 25 years of therapy, and I've had the best therapist. But before we begin, let me tell you just a bit more about Dina so the audience has an idea. Dina Crowder is known as the most innovative strategist and consultant for creators and leaders. She's worked privately with Emmy, Humanities Prize winners, CNN heroes, founders, writers, performers, educators, and upstarts from every industry. Dina's mission is to redefine power so that we can use power for good, as she believes that pure power is the capacity to direct influence that pure power is the capacity to directly influence with wisdom and compassion. Dean and I met a while back on a writer's course and have maintained a bunch of contact since, and I'm very excited to discuss survival archetypes with Dina Crowder. With that said, let's get to it. Dina, welcome once again to the next chapter with Charlie.
Hello, Charlie. Thank you so much for having me back on. It was really wonderful to be asked back.
Yeah, and I don't have to play pirate today, right?
Well, not yet. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, you are unpredictable. So I understand you broke away from a conference to speak with us today. Is that right?
I did. It's a great conference. It was for business ladies, so I will get back to it after you and I have this conversation.
How kind of you. Thank you for doing that. I really appreciate it. Last week, you spoke to a group that my wife runs called Influential Women, and you and I had an opportunity to meet. And you told me about this idea called survival archetypes, and I found it extremely helpful to understand how I personally deal with challenges and difficulties. But before we get into the subject of survival archetypes, Dina, I think it might be best if you explain the general concept of archetypes. What are archetypes, and why are they important?
I'd love to. First of all, let me say that word can be intimidating for some, archetype. It sounds like it's coming down from on high, you know, hallowed academia or tomes of psychology, Carl Jung, all that kind of stuff. So we're going to bring it down, because every person in the world is already an expert at archetypes. They just don't know it. If you know what a king is, or a queen, if you know what a minister is, if I say, look at that warrior over there, and you have some idea what I'm talking about, then you know archetypes. because archetypes are simply, as you said, patterns that organize our understanding. They are blueprints around which we, again, organize our society, our relationships, and our behavior. And the amazing thing about archetypes is that they are consistent through the centuries and across cultures. So that if you find yourself in ancient Rome talking to Julius Caesar, he would know what a warrior is. He would know what a poet is, or a healer, or a queen. And if you're in 21st century Paris or New York, same, we all know.
Are archetypes innate? Are they DNA'd, or is it something that is nurtured, or is it sort of a combination of both?
Well, I think it is a combination of many things. You know, Carl Jung, the Swiss psychologist, said, "The psyche is not of today. Its ancestry goes back millions of years." And his philosophy was that our individual consciousness is only one part of this much larger, much older collective consciousness. So when you ask, well, are these archetypes individual? Well, they're individually applied, but they are not individual, and they're not of today. They span the ages in terms of how human beings have developed. What are the patterns of behavior? What are the power dynamics that we see again and again and again in human relationships, in human societies?
That's I think, the most succinct and best definition I've heard of, as I've read of what's called Jung's collective unconscious. And that's sort of what you described, is that it is a collective, it is community, it is ageless or timeless. As long as man has existed on Earth, we've had these certain roles that each of us play that will impact the way we act and the way we react. Are there a certain number of archetypes, or are they just unlimited?
I suppose in one sense you could say, oh, it's boundless, it's unlimited, and that might be true. Yet, I think, because we're talking about human beings, there's probably, for the most part, a limited number of ways that we really interact, or at least 99.9% of the time we can have a grasp of the main archetypes, the ones that repeat again and again and again, and that we see, again, spanning time.
Now, in our coaching process, we are going to determine, for me, 8 archetypes. Tell me, and we've known one, and I don't mind telling everybody, one of them is Explorer. Mm-hmm. And how will I use those in practical life? You know, how do I implement what I learn about my archetypes? Are they just nice to know, or do they impact the way I live?
Well, we're going to put that pirate hat back on you and send you out on the high seas, Charlie. You didn't get the memo? You didn't?
No, I haven't. I haven't booked passage yet.
Yeah. Well, symbolically speaking, we're going to do that. But realistically speaking, how you would apply your particular archetype of Explorer is first and foremost to realize that this pattern tells you a lot about who you are at your essence and how you best operate. Another way of saying that is it tells you what you need to make sure you have in your life in order to sustain yourself at your best. So for you, that means a checklist. is my explorer, and we're talking, of course, about the symbolic explorer, the inner explorer, is that being satisfied? Is that being met? Is that being challenged in the way that I'm doing my scheduling, in the activities that I'm focusing on, in how I am investing my time, money, and energy? Is the explorer included? Because if the answer is yes, things are going to fare much better, and you're going to be very satisfied and also have the opportunity to get into what I call your zone of genius. If the answer is no, I don't have a sense of exploration. I don't have a sense of new terrain. I am not challenging myself in that area. That doesn't feel met or seen in any way. Then not only might you just come up against boredom that eventually spirals into ennui, but for some people, it can go far worse and down into forms of depression or anxiety, addiction even. This happens when we're not paying attention to, and a word that I like that's a little bit, or a phrase I like that's a little bit trendy now, is the care and feeding of. We're not paying attention to the care and feeding of these inner aspects, then we can get a lot of negative pushback, including, dun-dun-dun, something that takes us into your topic for today, which is the realm of the survival archetypes.
Yeah, thank you for the transition. That's a great transition. I do want to emphasize, however, that if I know that if I am not incorporating my explorer archetype in some form or fashion, and it doesn't have to be daily, but over an annual period, if that is not happening, I do not have this fulfilled and meaningful life that I'm seeking of having. There is something that is absolutely missing in me, and we won't get into this, but you showed me how it can be replaced by negatives, by behavior that's probably not the best in the world, because I'm missing something of it. It's an incredible concept. But let's get into the survival archetypes, because that's what we talked about last week, and we had never chatted about those before, and I was really interested in them. Can you tell me about survival archetypes? I know there are four, and there's subcategories in some of them, but basically four survival archetypes. And can you describe what survival archetypes are and what the four types are?
Absolutely. It's very simple, Charlie. We all want to survive. Nobody wants to die or be laid low. We have a drive in us as human beings to seek pleasure and avoid pain. Pleasure is safety in many cases. Pleasure is love. Pleasure is food on the table. Pleasure is those human needs of significance, connection, contribution. All those kinds of things factor in when I say we're seeking pleasure and we are really avoiding pain. So these survival archetypes can be understood in that context. And
Of seeking pleasure and avoiding pain.
Yes. So, for example, we all have survival archetypes. We all have to go through four patterns, blueprints, if you will, modes of behavior that put us in contact with the question of, will I survive? That's the most streamlined way that I can say it. And they are the archetype of the child. We all know that one because we were all a child and we had to rely on adults, on others to take care of us. When we're a child, we don't feel that we have agency. We all also have these other three that we go through, and they are victim, prostitute, and saboteur. Now, those might be surprising to some of your listeners who perhaps associate prostitute, for example, with sex. But when we're speaking symbolically, which is about the language of archetypes, it's actually about compromise. It's about whether or not you are going to, quote-unquote, sell out. Are you going to compromise your values? Are you going to justify doing things, saying things, being a kind of person that doesn't sit right with your heart and soul, but you do it in order to, here's our word, survive? So that's an example of one, just one of those archetypes of prostitute, saboteur, and victim that we might think, what does that have to do with me? But we all face choices that have to do with, what am I going to do? Am I going to maintain my integrity? Or do I feel like I can't maintain my integrity and survive? It's a hard choice to make.
You know, and is survive, can that also include success, what I consider success, that I consider my success at risk if I don't do this, not just my survival, but that I attain high goals that I have set?
For one person, for example, I saw this documentary last year about a gentleman in India whose job is rat catcher. I was so fascinated by this, Charlie, because juxtaposed with what we think of as career success, right? I looked at this man and he was so grateful. He was so appreciative. He was getting dressed for his nighttime rat catching job and he was saying, oh, you know, I'm successful. And for him, this was really an amazing opportunity because he had enough money to feed his family and put a humble roof over their heads. So for him, the choice of, okay, survival is going to be very different than if we are in an urban area in, say, the United States, and someone is faced with a choice that for them might be a $100,000 deal or a $1 million deal, but
right.
In their mind, right, they might think of that as survival.
I see.
It's just a different, it's all in how you contextualize what success and survival mean for you.
Can you, Tina, I know it's a lot of information and it may be a lot for our readers or our listeners to apprehend, but can you briefly describe, you described the prostitute, so I understand that, and that it has nothing to do with sex, or it may have everything to do with sex. I mean, both.
It may, yes.
Both fit. You know, they absolutely fit. But also tell us about the child victim and saboteur, you know, because I think that's helpful, so our listeners may be able to identify one or two that they sort of fall into.
The word saboteur, as I understand it, comes from the shoe, S-A-B-O-T, the sabot, which is a shoe, it's Dutch, I believe, that someone took a sabot and put it in the works of a machine because they wanted to stop the machine from continuing on. They wanted to protest. And that is the origin of the word sabotage. You throw a shoe or a wrench in the works, everything stops. Sabotage and the saboteur are all about disruption. Disrupting the way things are going, disrupting the status quo. If things are moving along, right, in a certain direction and there's momentum gathering, whether that momentum is positive or negative, the saboteur comes in and stops that momentum. It disrupts it. In our personal lives, the saboteur shows up most often when we have a fear of change. And again, the change we are afraid of might be positive or it might be negative. But if I, as a person, deep down, don't have the faith and the confidence that I will be able to manage what's coming next, emotionally or physically, then the saboteur is an archetype that enters the picture.
We'll come in and do something to disrupt the whole movement toward change and make it not possible. And it's even it's even true with that, as you have taught me, that with there was a book you had me read that talked about the upper limit problem, and that people that are very, very successful don't believe they deserve it, and they themselves sabotage their success. And because, and it, it makes sense now, it's the fear of change, and it's the fear of something different, and am I capable of maintaining that? Is it out of my out of my ballpark?
Yes. As you know, my specialty is power, and specifically peer power, which is the ability to influence directly to get different outcomes. But the twist with peer power is that it's through the lens of wisdom and compassion. What I find with leaders, creators who are craving and thirsting to live their lives and leave a legacy.
We're kind of losing you just a little bit here.
Can you hear me?
Yep, now I can.
Okay. What I find with these leaders and creators who have a thirst to leave behind a legacy having used pure power is they almost all at some point question their capacity to handle more power.
Right.
And that results in the saboteur coming in almost always unconsciously to disrupt the potential momentum or the potential leap to that next level.
Do you know where I find the saboteur in my limited sphere? Is everyone knows that I'm involved in 12-step programs, and people that are getting really close to what looks like it's going to be a stable recovery frequently sabotage that. They start drinking or drugging again just because they don't believe they're capable of staying sober. They don't believe that they're capable of this, and so they will sabotage it. And it's just, it's heartbreaking every time, but that is a perfect example of the saboteur. I want to get into, also I want to talk about the child and the victim, but I think before we do that, it would be good to take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and I've got more questions for you.
All right, I've got answers.
That's great. Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And I am doing, for me, one of my most interesting episodes in a long time. And I'm speaking with the ever-so-brilliant Dina Crowder, and we're talking about survival archetypes and how we handle challenging and difficult situations. Thus far, we've talked, there are four, and we've talked about the saboteur, who will come in and sabotage at a time when there is a fear of change. And we've talked about the prostitute, which has little to do with sex and more to do with compromise and integrity. And there are two more, Dina, that we want to get into before I ask you even more questions. But we want to talk about the child and the victim. Which one do you want to go with first?
Well, let's go with the victim, shall we?
We shall.
We shall. The victim. Oh, my goodness. We've all felt powerless at some point. We've all felt like I have no agency or no ability to affect a different outcome. We've all feared that we were weak. We didn't have leverage. We were up against a Goliath in terms of authority or force. And, oh, I'm shrinking down. Victim, victimizer. So the victim is really asking us to tap into our strength, to tap into a sense of our own value and a sense of agency and choice, to know that no matter what condition we find ourselves in, we always have the capacity for choice, and that we do have what it takes to meet or exceed the demands of our life. So that gets into self-esteem. If our self-esteem, if our value is very fragmented, then we will have a really hard time with this archetype, with the victim. We will perhaps even get stuck there.
It's funny, I have a friend that was fond of using the phrase, now, we have to not include people who have experienced abuse or really traumatic situations of that, but he said, apart from that, we have, instead of victims, we have volunteers. We have that we volunteer into our victimhood when we actually have the power within us to overcome that, and we have the strength within us to overcome that, but we don't believe it because we have been told, especially, these are all childhood archetypes. These are all things that have come from early, early years, do they not?
Yes, they come from early years, and they come from the many, many thousands of years of human development. Think about how many times human beings in that collective psyche have faced these feelings, whether it was because they were out in the wild and they had to really find their ingenuity to triumph over nature, or whether they had to find their strength within themselves in human relationships.
Yeah, that
the power dynamics.
That victim archetype, you know, is so common now with blame and it's somebody else's fault, somebody else did it, and it's the failure to assume responsibility. As soon as we begin to assume responsibility for everything in our life, victimhood goes away, and we become so much more powerful. When we own our issues, we then have power to overcome them. But if we don't own them, we are owned by them. So what about the child?
Well, I want to get to the child, but before that, I want to point out something along the lines of what you're speaking about with the victim and its prevalence in our modern society. Franklin Delano Roosevelt saved capitalism in 8 days. Back in the middle of Depression, I believe it was in 1933, there was a moment when it looked like capitalism might just collapse in the United States and perhaps have reverberations all across the various countries that were on that same system, because there was great fear with the banks. What he did is he went on the radio, gave his fireside chat. It's incredibly famous, because what he did was he spoke to the archetype emotionally of the victim. He spoke to the fear that people were having. He spoke to their their extreme terror that they were going to be flattened and destroyed by this banking system that they didn't understand, this big Goliath authority that they didn't control and that they were left behind by. And the way that he delivered it with such wisdom and such compassion, which you know are my pure power buzzwords, people who were ready to go to the bank and withdraw all their money did not. They kept their money in the banks because he told them, this is how banking works, this is what you should do, and their victim archetype, if you will, felt met, and there you go. We had this unbelievably miraculous result. Now we see in the political sphere, the victim is being spoken to by many people in not the politics, but in media and everywhere, but the victim is being riled up.
It is huge. It is huge today. Yeah.
Right? It's being misappropriated in terms of keeping people in that place of the big victim and stoking their worst fears. Let me say things like, oh, I'm, you know, it's not me. Everyone's out to get me. It's their fault. We get into victimology, and unfortunately, we have a massive trend towards that now.
Oh, in politics, and it's in my mind, it's both the far left and the far right. It's mm-hmm. not either one. Both
I
of
agree.
Them arguing, and they both victimize or want people to feel as victims. That way,
yes.
They garner an audience and they garner power,
right.
Because
mm-hmm.
I'm here to save you from your victimhood. And
mm-hmm.
no one can save you from your victimhood except yourself.
Yes. Yes.
See, look what you've taught me.
You are wise beyond belief all by yourself, but thank you. I appreciate that. We want to go to the child, I know, and that's a place of all of our beginnings. We come as a baby that needs total care and love and attention. We grow into a child. And this is where our perception of boundaries, of safety, of whether we will be loved and cared for, how to get that love and care, how we are seen in the world. Where are we in the hierarchy? This is where all of that is developed. And when we see people who are adults stuck, if you will, in what might be called a wounded child archetype or an orphan child archetype, even a divine child, you know, that's like this magical kind of feeling of innocence that the person brings. And it's a wonderful quality, but if you're stuck there, you may not be grounded in other ways. So that might need some integration. And of course, if your child is what we would call wounded, and that's the one that's primarily driving the vehicle of your life, then you'll have a hard time. You'll have a hard time with career and relationships and spirituality, because you'll always be looking to someone else to perhaps rescue you or as the authority instead of, as you said, knowing that you can and are meant to take responsibility for your mature life.
You know, it reminds me of my youth, and I've talked about it on the podcast, so I can just mention it ever so briefly, but I was sort of in a homeless situation for a number of years, and I used that sort of as, you know, I guess I could say excuse, Dina, but as sort of a rationale for my pathologies until I came to the point where I was able to recognize the positive attributes that came from those negative situations, and that
yes.
I am the man I am today because of those situations. And I have to thank,
mm-hmm.
you know, I actually have to thank whatever brought those on for making me who I am today. It's counterintuitive.
Yes, you are the culmination of these experiences, what you perceive from them, how you responded, and then how you chose to evolve through and beyond them. The survival archetypes are not bad at all. They are just these patterns that we are confronted with, and the idea is to learn to move through them with enough awareness and power that we, I use the word mature, but it's just really evolve into
right.
what I call our power archetypes. So like your explorer that we talked about is one of your several power archetypes. And the extent to which, let's just take you, the extent to which your child, your prostitute, your saboteur, and your victim are pretty healthy. Nobody's perfect, but to the extent that they're pretty healthy is the extent to which you are spending the majority of your time getting to express and embody the interplay of your various power archetypes. So I'll use an example of this from my own life that's a little more subtle, because sometimes we can say, oh, well, I don't feel like a victim. I know I'm empowered or, whatever.
Right.
But one of the things that I was always told, even very young, was you are an excellent teacher. This is, you know, I'm talking back in high school. You're an excellent teacher, Dina. You're so good. And in my early 20s, I created this program called The Essential Woman, right after graduate school, in fact, in which I was leading groups of women through this program to find their excellence and express it. So it was spiritual, it was personal development, it was also accountability, and I thought, oh, okay, yeah, excellent. But zone of excellence is still not zone of genius. And it
you're going to have to explain that to us.
I will. We have areas where we're incompetent. We're just not very good. Then we have areas where we're competent, and we have areas where we're excellent. But excellence is not the same as genius. That's the place where you are really in the flow, in sync, if you will,
sure.
with what it is that you do naturally, do best, do organically. That's kind of the best way that I can simply describe it.
Yeah, not only are you really good at what you do, you love being good at it. And
yes.
you love doing
yes.
it over and over and over again, because there's many things
yes.
that I may be good at, but that doesn't mean I love doing them. I'd rather
yes.
somebody else did them.
Yes, yes, that's right. Yeah, there's a passion there. So I wasn't making that distinction. I was thinking, teacher, I'm excellent. Great, let me keep doing this. And then I had a friend several years ago, very wise, and she said, Dina, you are not really a teacher. You're a guru. And I couldn't own it, Charlie. And I said, okay, thanks a lot.
Sure, because that's a pretty high accolade.
Yeah, it's a big word, and there's baggage that comes with it.
Sure.
And I thought, oh, right? And she would just, you know, every few months, she'd say, well, Dina, you know, you're not really a teacher. You're a guru. And when I, as I let that sit and, you know, a couple years passed, dove into it, I got it on a symbolic or an archetypal level, that my wise counselor archetype expresses itself as more of a guru and less of a teacher. And the guru, for me, is not someone who's perfect or who has all the answers, but someone who is playing with this very big vision, big context, and isn't focused on having to teach people who are beginners, the basics. The guru is the one that's training the leaders.
Right.
And that was a very big distinction for me in terms of this archetypal wheel that we're speaking about, because had I not embraced it, then I'm stuck in that vision of myself as a teacher who goes in and teaches people who are just beginning. And that's not really my zone of genius. I would be stuck in a survival archetype if I didn't realize that.
I understand. I want to be really conscious of your time. I know you have limited time, and I have like a list in my mind of questions that could go on for another half an hour, but I won't put you through that. However, I must ask, as I look at these archetypes, a child, victim, saboteur, and prostitute, there are times that I personally feel an affinity to each of them.
Yes.
That I'm not. So is it possible to have more than one survival archetype, that there is more than one happening at a time, or does one sort of dominate and the others just are secondary or tertiary?
Well, we all have experienced all of those four survival archetypes at some point, and depending on where we are in our lives, they might all be up and on board at a given time. At the same time, for others of us, we might just have one that is getting attention. But I do want to stress, independent of who we are, we all will have an experience with those survival archetypes. And more than that, one of the things, we haven't done this much yet, Charlie, but one of the things that I love to do, and that's very helpful because it makes the survival archetypes precise, is I help people identify a character or a sub-persona that embodies whatever their survival archetype is. And I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
Let's say I'm talking to someone and it's clear that the victim pattern is up, and you know they want to move through it. Well, what we can do is to find out who that subpersona, who that character is. Our brain thinks in terms of stories, not so much in terms of the broad strokes of victim, right? That's a rather large concept. But it's very possible, if I take you through a process and we're working on that victim, and what comes through is that your victim is an 18-year-old woman whose name is Linda, and this is how she feels. That's going to actually do you a lot more good than just even knowing that big term, victim. And you can develop a relationship with this, what I'm calling a sub-persona, and that will provide a huge amount of growth for you.
So you're backdooring into this archetype. You're backdooring through a sub-persona. You're really talking about a person that I am or have been, and what did that person, as I went through my childhood, I looked at my childhood through adult eyes rather than a child's eyes, and I saw a whole different persona. But I'm looking at a real me, and then the archetype can emerge from that process. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I had a client who is a singer who has had, I believe, platinum albums. And one of the things that she was struggling with, she couldn't seem to make any headway. And these archetypes, as we've named them, were just too broad for her to relate to on an emotional level. Victim, a saboteur. She's like, I just want to get out of suffering, right? And what I did was I led her through a process where she was able to make contact with this aspect of herself that she named the centurion, right? She said it looks like a man in Roman times,
right,
with all the garb and the gear. And when she said, well, who are you? What's your job? In this inner process, the character said to her, well, I'm here to prevent you from loss. So you can just call me the loss prevention expert. And she said, yes, okay, I get it. So you're trying to prevent me from loss, but the approach you're using is to distract me and sabotage me from my creativity. So I'm not able to write and finish my next album, which has already been financed, and I'm running out of time because you have made your job one that is about protecting me, but you think that it's protecting me to stop my creativity. So this breakthrough, Charlie, was probably one of the most profound that she's had in her life because it opened everything up. It opened up her ability to connect to why she was in this creative rut. It opened up her ability then to get back into the groove or the sink of her creativity so she could finish her album.
That's incredible. I want to help our listeners, you know, because I feel like our topic, this is such deep and profound, and I want to make sure that our listeners can somehow begin to implement these ideas. Do you have any suggestions? I mean, are there any texts to read, or is there a process? If I'm going through a period of fear and a period of change, is there anything, two or three things I could do that could actually help me identify this archetype and reform it, reframe it, restructure it?
One really simple thing that people can do is to close their eyes. Let's say, like you have just outlined, you're feeling stuck, you're confused, something's not working. You can close your eyes, take a few deep breaths, get into a still place, kind of the place you'd get into if you were going to do a prayer or a meditation. And you can simply, once you feel that you've gotten, like, okay, I've calmed down a little bit, and there's some space and stillness, you can ask, who is it in me? If these words had a voice and were a character, who and what are they? And you'd be surprised at the result of that. You may see an actual character, like a mythic character, or you might see a younger version of yourself, a child, or yourself at another age. You might see someone else you know. It can be real or imagined, it doesn't matter. But what it is, when we're talking symbolic language, your psyche understands symbols. That's how it functions. And this symbol, this character, is going to encapsulate the message that you need to see, hear, and understand. So, for example, you do that, and then let's say this character comes forward. Like I just told the story, the inner centurion. Well, then what's the next easy step? Take out a pen and a piece of paper and just stream of consciousness, write down the answers to a series of simple questions. Who are you? What do you need? What wisdom do you have for me? And what's my next best step? Just those will begin to open up some possibility that you didn't see before and begin the process of getting you unstuck.
You know, I want to emphasize something you said when you said stream of consciousness. You know, it is so easy for us to sort of debate on, oh, maybe it's this person, maybe it's not this person. Whatever image, what I've learned from you is whatever image first appears, go with it. Just go with that one. Even if it's wrong, it doesn't make a difference because it's going to end up being okay. And just go with it and just pursue that line of thinking and approach those questions that you've suggested. And you may find great help in time of fear. As a matter of fact, I just talked to a friend this morning that had a vision. He was talking to a pastor about some difficulties in his life, and he had a vision of his life at 13, and he could smell it, he could feel it, he could taste it, and it was very negative, and it's impacted his entire life. This is the first time that he's looked at it, and it is his life is going to change as a result. I told him, you're going to have to go down before you go up, so you're going to have to go down into this misery. And you're going to have to live through that misery and identify it and work with it, and then as you do, you will rise up twice as strong as you are now, because you will identify how to manage it.
We're a walking map of power. We are not only a walking map in the sense that we have these awesome power archetypes like ruler or maverick, but we are also a walking map of power in the sense that our wounds are right there in and on the map, and they are evident if we're willing to discover them, and they are simply asking to be healed. And if we can combine the two, it's a two-pronged approach. If we can allow ourselves to see and heal the wounds at the same time that we are connecting with the power archetypes, with our contract with life, which some people might call your purpose or your vocation. If we're doing both of those at the same time, we are really unstoppable.
Dean, I'm going to wrap with that, because that is just such excellent advice. And I'm going to ask you, I know you're in a rush, but hang on till we close the show, because I want to chat with you just for a sec. You have been, as usual, amazing. I hope the audience can see why you're my mentor. I love your wisdom. I want to thank you for spending time with me today, and also taking time from your conference. That's very gracious of you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You are really a fabulous person. As I said, you are wise. You are powerful, and you really contribute so much to everybody who interacts with you personally or in this public forum that you've created. So it's my honor to be here.
Thank you so much. I also want to give a shout out to our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And be sure to check us out on our website. That's nextchapter.life, L-I-F-E. And until next... this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.
You've been listening to another episode of The Next Chapter with Charlie, right here in Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net.